through transgendering. And being female is also, unfortunately, I mean, it's possible to allow this patriarchy to colonize your mind, even though you're the victim of it. And that's all I have time to talk about. I really appreciate you calling in. And stay tuned for more of the Radio Zine, going out to you via KBOO.FM to all the ships at sea.
Attention KABU members, you are invited to give your feedback on KABU's draft mission and vision statements. Based on member feedback from the recent survey and member retreat, KABU board and staff members created draft mission and vision statements. Now we want to know what you think. This is your chance to help define KABU's guiding principles and priorities. Visit KABU.FM to review the draft mission and vision statements and submit your comments. Paper copies of the draft statements are also available at the station. Comments are due July 17th. If you have questions, please contact Monica Beamer at monica@kabu.org. Thank you for contributing to the development of KABU's mission and vision statements and for your support of community radio.
Well, good morning. This is Fight the Empire, and we're going to do another show on the situation in Greece. I want to turn people on to a very interesting article, and it's in the Counterpunch, and it's called "What's the Deal? Syriza, the Troika, and the Future of Austerity in Greece," and it was written by Peter Bomer, who is a professor up at the Evergreen State College, and he might possibly call in during this show. I hope he will. But anyway, if he doesn't, let me tell you what his article is about. He talks about, the whole, we've heard so much about the hardships of austerity, you know, how people are losing their pensions and everything else, and, you know, the standard of living has just gone down and down and down, and unemployment keeps rising. I mean, it's just the economy is just a total breakdown. Oh, he's on the phone. Peter Bomer, are you there?
Yes, yes, I am.
Well, welcome to KABU.
Hi.
And
hi.
I was just telling people about your article in Counterpunch.
Okay.
And why don't you talk about it a little bit? I was just telling people that, most of us, you know, the news we get about Greece focuses on all the hardship, which is really there. But your article kind of goes beyond that. It kind of goes into the future.
Okay, so I've been to Greece. Let me just give a little background. You know, I teach folk economy. I've been a long-term activist in Olympia, Washington. I teach at Evergreen. Mm-hmm. I visited Greece in 2010 and 2013, just visiting, talking to many groups there. And the hardship over the last 5 years in Greece in terms of growing unemployment, increasing poverty, has really been extreme. You might think of the United States in the early 1930s depression. At the same time, I've seen Greece as a possibility of a hopeful future in the sense of a lot of movements on the ground in Greece. Movements that have been basically dealing with, like, people taking over factories, a few factories, organizing alternative food production. And the Syriza government that got elected in January of 2015 ran on an anti-austerity program and really brought together a lot of different forces in Greece in terms of people have been like what you call Eurocommunists, people out of the World Social Forums, many other forces too, and ran on an anti-austerity program. But what's happened certainly in the last few months has been very troubling.
Well, the thing about the was one of the things I want to talk about was these sort of food networks and everything else, this sort of informal economy, solidarity economy that's springing up. And my understanding is that the Syriza government didn't really do anything at all about that. They were so focused on the negotiations with the Eurocrats that they didn't, you know, I think if they had pushed this self-sufficiency more, then they might not have been in the jam they're in now.
Yeah, so I mean, it's a difficult situation, and Syriza, you know, did have some of these solidarity networks. And to me, the excitement thing about Greece had been both a party that seemed to be a new type of party that wasn't just kind of business as usual, that was really working with some of the solidarity networks in Greece, that was really pushing for an economy to meet people's needs with these movements from below, particularly what you call the anti-authoritarians there, these food networks, the social centers that had, for example, child care centers, free health clinics. One we visited had originally started for just the immigrants, because there's a large immigrant population in Greece. And, you know, there's a very strong fascist anti-immigrant movement there, and the Golden Dawn particularly. And so a lot of that had developed. And I thought that combination of these movements from below and Syriza from above would be really powerful. But you're right that so much of the Syriza effort had gone into negotiating with the people called the Troika, the International Monetary Fund, the 19 nations of what's called the Eurozone. Greece is one of the 19 nations that uses the euro as the currency and the International Monetary Fund. And they kept trying to negotiate a deal where they would get new loans and some of the debt would be maybe written down. But the Troika, led by Germany, those three groups, was totally unwilling to make any kind of compromise, kept pushing really kind of neocolonial kind of regulations and policies onto Greece. And that ended up being most of the Syriza policy, tried to negotiate with people who wouldn't. And then there was this really inspiring referendum, which I don't know if your readers are all aware of, or your listeners are, on July the 5th, Sunday, just a week and a half ago, Friday the 5th, Sunday the 5th, people voted overwhelmingly, over 60%, against accepting austerity. And that was even though all the media in Greece, even worse than here, said the society would collapse if people didn't vote for austerity. Still, over 60% of the Greek people, mainly in working class areas, voted overwhelmingly against it. So that was on the 5th. And then a few days later, Syriza agreed to these horrible conditions that I think will keep the unemployment high, the poverty high. And you're right, that's where all the forces have gone. And then led by Germany, even worse conditions were imposed on Greece this week. And the Greek parliament, I believe, voted to accept them yesterday.
Well, this is very... I'd like to say a little bit more about the food networks. Now, Greece, apparently, they do export some foods, you know, like olives and olive oil and that kind of stuff. But they they are not self-sufficient in food. I wonder, could they possibly become self-sufficient in food?
So this is, I think what you're asking about is really important. So one of the fears in Greece is that if they left the Eurozone, if they had their own currency, that the society would be even worse than they are because, for example, they do import a large percentage of the food. You know, it's a really rich country in terms of land, but again, just from going driving through it, you know, by train twice, it seems a lot of the land is not being used for agricultural purposes. Mm-hmm. So in the short run, I think probably it would be impossible to convert to even close to self-sufficient country in food. But over time, I would think that would be really important when Greece begins to produce more of its own needs there. Mm-hmm. So I think the potential is there. But right now, like so many countries in the world, it's this economy where certain goods get exported, and a lot, in this case, they import a lot more food than they do. But these networks, you're visiting somewhere, you had situation in small farmers or cooperatives in these social centers, like one that I visited, and then food would be given, you know, for free, or people could give a little bit of money to people who needed them, was a really hopeful sign, not only in terms of getting food to poor people, but developing, you know, values of cooperation rather than everything going through the market.
Well, I guess, you know, self-sufficiency, it takes time to get, you know, you have to prepare for it, you have to plan for it.
Right.
And but it just seems to me if a country can't feed itself, it's really kind of screwed right from the start, unless you have some reliable friends. And obviously, Greece does not have any reliable friends right now. I don't know if Russia might step in to sort of talk about that. But now, they don't really have any reliable friends. So they are...
A few, but not, for example, better in the... I mentioned to you the referendum of July 5th, the one that people voted over 60% against austerity. For example, Maduro, who's the president of Venezuela, Nicolas Maduro, actually was there, you know, campaigning and supporting the Greek people.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yes. And then there is a growth of these movements around Europe that are anti-austerity, like, for example, a group called Podemos in Spain.
Right.
It came actually out of Los Indignados or the M15, their Occupy movement. So there is, I mean, not enough. I think your point is well taken, that the need for solidarity of the people who not only are hurting but also are struggling for maybe developing a different society is really important. And I'm not sure about having to be self-sufficient. You know, a whole idea of food sovereignty, which are movements in Greece that talk about it. It's not that you would import no food and be self-sufficient, but that you would control your own food, that the majority of food would come from the people in Greece, and then maybe you would import some goods, you know, with other neighbors and so on, but that you would have really control of your own food. And I think that idea is a very, very important one.
It's interesting you mentioned Maduro, because Venezuela has some kind of food problems too, and I've been trying to track that down. I mean, they do have food networks there. But, you know, they had a big land reform thing, and I'm just wondering what did Venezuela do with these big plantations that they took over, you know? But that's sort of another story.
Yeah, and I've been to Venezuela, too. You know, they have actually increased food production a lot since 1998-99, when first Hugo Chavez was elected president. But you're right, issue of really producing sufficient food in actually a very large country, a country that's many, many times the size of Greece, has not been accomplished. There's been a lot of success in the Venezuelan revolution, but I would say food production has not been one of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned in your article, sort of new currencies, and which is very interesting, because I just read recently that some people in Greece are using the Turkish lira and the Bulgarian lev. And then another article just came out by this man named Bernard Leiter, who's a currency expert. And he proposes a dual currency. And he says, actually, this is what you have in England right now, that, you know, stores will take the British pound and they will also take the euro. And they sort of, when it comes tax time, they some reconcile everything. But, you know, that he is saying that Greece could use a euro for its sort of international dealings. And they could sort of use what he calls a neo-drachma for local, you know, within the country kind of trade. I don't know. Do you think that could happen?
Okay. So, So the drachma was the currency of Greece before they joined the Eurozone. And I have felt for a long time, as well as, you know, many, many people in Greece, which is, you know, much more important than what you think, have really thought of this idea of developing their own currency. I think in doing that, though, they would have had to, and they weren't willing to say, we're not going to pay a lot of the debt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so maybe with that, they would have been cut off to a lot of the euro directly. But again, if they had developed the drachma, it would have traded. You know, they would have probably traded with the euro maybe some reduced price. So I do think developing their own currency, preparing for that, like the food you mentioned, having printed their own currency, that should have started a long time ago. I think it's never too late, but I'm trying to say in my article that right now, developing the capacity to do that, because I think to develop their own currency, it probably also means taking over their own banks and making sure that credit flows, for example, to cooperatives, to business producing food, to local business that are really increasing employment. Something along those lines would be necessary. And maybe you would still, they would probably still have to have access to selling their currency to the euro or the dollar. I mean, they obviously couldn't print euros. They can't really print them now. They really have almost no control of their money whatsoever. It's really outside of the Greek people, even the Greek government's power. So I think something what you're saying does make a lot of sense.
Well, you know, the International Monetary Fund, they just came out with a report which got a lot of attention, and they're saying that that Greece needs debt relief, that it's unsustainable what's going on now. And so the IMF is really at odds with the the Eurozone people, especially Germany. So this is very interesting that
I think it's interesting. It's, to me, it splits them among kind of these economic criminals, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think that's good what you said about the IMF and the French also. On the other hand, a lot of these austerity programs of privatizing the Greek economy, forcing Greece, like the ports, the electric company, to sell them off, to further reduce pensions, which already have been cut a lot in Greece, to lower the limit the ability of workers to organize, to cut wages, all of those the IMF has also believed. So you could say, in this case, they're being the good cop.
Yeah.
Germany and some of the others are being the bad cops. So I think it's good that there are those differences, but I don't think we can say they're playing a good role. But you're right. And the thing I was saying, on the one thing about cutting the debt, which is just in a way that it can't be paid back. You know, many people have pointed out that actually Germany in the early 50s, when they had a huge debt tied to some of the payments from the war afterwards, it was totally forgiven by international lending agencies, other European countries, the United States, and people see that as having a tribute to the German development. And Tsipras, the prime minister of Greece, who unfortunately has gone along with Lars' policy, he has said for all of the destruction that Germany did during World War II under the Nazis, that they deserve reparations, which I think morally is very correct, but obviously they don't have the power to get that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, when you talk about planning ahead, I mean, what it makes me think of is like an abused spouse, you know. An abused spouse is better if she plans ahead and sets up a place to take her and her kids and place to live and friends to help her out, and then rather just wait until the blow up and then just run out of the house. You know, it takes a lot of planning. It takes time to set up something like that.
Totally. So that's I think a very powerful analogy or metaphor. But even with that, I think with the vote that, you know, we've talked about, the one where the people voted, even with all this propaganda so strongly against austerity, I just feel that Syriza, even though a gun was being held to the head, like the case of, like the woman you mentioned, the gun, you know, or the horror and domestic violence, nevertheless, probably leaving still would have been a better thing, or saying we're not going to accept these demands. And they had a lot of, I think after that vote, they had so much support from the population, even though a lot of people in Greece really feared leaving. And I think, to me, if Greece had, like, the thing of the drachma becoming the main currency, you know, when they wouldn't have paid the loans, it would have been a difficult situation. Like the food that you mentioned earlier, the imports, probably the situation would have been worse in the next year or two, even worse than it's now. Because now, you know, they're going to get some money coming in. It's just going to be continued depression, but maybe the economic depression would have gotten even worse. But I think there would have been a possibility over the next few years for people's lives to improve. But Syriza, at least the leadership, there's a big division within them, were not willing to take that risk. I mean, it's funny, even like liberal economists in the United States, like Paul Krugman, who writes for The Times, and Joseph Stiglitz, had begun to say that, you know, that's probably better over the next few years than this constant, you know, what people call economic waterboarding.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's very interesting. Sometimes I wonder what kind of a future Europe has. You know, here they are. The, you know, Greece is not the only economy in trouble. There's Spain and Italy and France, right, and who knows who else. And now the Europe is kind of stuck with, you know, with Ukraine, thanks to the U.S.
Right.
warmongers. And then they get all these migrants coming in from Africa, and Europe helped create those migrants. They created the conditions that these people are fleeing from. And so I just wonder what kind of a future Europe has.
Yeah, so obviously none of us are fortune tellers, right?
Well, yeah, true.
But I, you know, okay, so one worrisome factor is that, you know, a little bit like the United States, because a lot of stuff you were saying also applies to the U.S., right, about we have a lot of responsibility to a lot of the immigrants coming here from Central America.
From Mexico,
right?
Yes.
A lot of analogies that way. So, you know, like there's anti-immigrant movements in the United States, and in Europe, the combination of the anti-immigrant and the people who are really against the austerity, like Golden Dawn in Greece, which is really, I would say, a Nazi type neo-Nazi party.
Yeah.
And, you know, officially attacked immigrants and so on. They, besides this really small and totally dogmatic communist party, the KKE, they, and Golden Dawn, they were really from the kind of political parties there. They were the really strong force against austerity. They voted very much no at every time, saying we're against austerity. And their view is almost like, you know, socialism for Greeks. Like they have food programs also, but, you know, only for Greeks. So the immigrants try to actually use any of those programs. They're physically attacked and so on too by Golden Dawn, even though there's a lot of support and solidarity with immigrants from some of the movements, from even from Syriza too. So my worry is that in Italy, in Greece, in many countries, it's going to be a movement to the right. So that's one real danger, right?
Mm-hmm.
A really fascist right based on anti-immigrant, anti-austerity, saying, you know, immigrants are causing the problems. These outside institutions are taking away our sovereignty, which is true, but their solution is a totally authoritarian, basically fascist solution.
Well, do you think maybe the powers that be in Europe prefer the fascists? I mean, almost like we're seeing the 30s all over again, where when it came to a choice between the Bolsheviks and the Nazis, guess whose side the upper class came down on, you know?
I don't see that, at least from Greece. You know, what you're saying may be more true in countries like Italy. I don't see that in Greece now. Spain, some of what you're saying, I think, might be relevant, too, where there's really growing anti-immigrant stuff in Spain. In Spain, the unemployment rates are similar to Greece. I mean, they're close to 25%, right?
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, I do see, for example, in Greece, that these programs are not going to work, even on their own terms. And that's what the IMF report, even though I criticize the IMF, I think is saying that the problem of just being kicked down the road for a year or two, Greece is not going to be able to pay their continuing debt. And what's going to happen, I mentioned in the article, you're going to have, again, higher tax rates, more people losing their jobs or staying the same. They're not going to have this economic growth, which these predictions, which are kind of just, you know, fairy tales, are predicting. So their tax revenues can go down. They're not going to meet the requirements and balance in their budget, so it'll be calls for more austerity, calls for further cutting in spending, which has been cut so much already. So hopefully that at some time this idea, together with other countries, is saying we want to develop our own currency, our own economy. I mean, that's my hope, that these policies are unsustainable and the right's really going to grow. But I have hope that between Greece, Spain, even Ireland, you know, Sinn Féin, Portugal, another country really suffering. There are these movements on the ground. So there is hope also, you know, with a lot of really hardship, which we shouldn't downplay.
Mm-hmm.
But again, a lot of places in the world are in a lot of hardship too. But I think there are possibilities. I don't think the future is written, but I do think it is the center maybe will not hold. I think the solutions are going to be more, even a more liberatory, hopefully to be a liberatory socialist type of solution. But I think the dangers of the fascist stuff, and the point you made is really important too, is very, very worrisome.
Well, it's interesting that Sinn Féin is Irish for ourselves alone.
Right.
But,
right.
You know, I kind of wonder. I mean, that it looks to me like growth is slowing down all around the world. And in that case, if there's not enough growth, how can you possibly, what does that do to the whole system of lending money at interest? It seems to me it kind of cuts it undercuts it.
Yeah, so basically, we're all familiar with a near economic collapse in many countries about 2007, 2008, 2009. In Greece, it was a little bit later, really 2010, right? And in terms of employment, in terms of people's incomes, there really hasn't been a recovery, right? And that's what you're pointing out. And so I think we have an unstable economy. Debt is growing again. And in the United States, it's a little bit different. Jobs have really grown here. So that is true. But, you know, people's wages haven't.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, again, in a very, very unstable economy, to say that the economy recovered, I do think is doesn't have much to do with the truth. You know, even like China, there's declining growth. That's been the kind of engine of the global economy over the last, you know, basically 10 or 15 years, and that's slowing down also.
Well, we're kind of getting to approaching maybe some kind of a no-growth economy, and there are no-growth economists who talk about this now, and it's maybe people should start thinking about it more and planning for it, because I don't see how you could possibly, what kind of a banking system would you have in a no-growth economy?
So we haven't talked at all about the whole environmental crisis, which, you know, is a whole other topic you want to talk about today, which is really serious, and it's not separate from the economy, as I'm sure if you think about it, it's pretty clear, right? When the more and more the social costs of drought, of just many things connected to climate change are really there. I think the problem is just in a zero economic growth economy in a capitalist society based on growth, the people who pay the price most are poorer people and working class people.
Mm-hmm.
So what we need to really think about, I think the idea of really non-economy, at least in the global north, I think in the global south, just like with climate, there is a need for growth, but a different kind of growth, not just growth of GDP, but of people's of useful goods. I think that would require some kind of what I believe in a participatory socialist society that's really based on people's needs, on sustainability, of community and work control. That's what we need to go if the planet survive, people survive. But a no growth in a capitalist economy basically is kind of almost an impossibility or something that would be really harmful to a lot of people too. But I think the ideas are really important in a different society.
Well, I think that is the real point that people ought to be thinking about. And we're at the end of our time. I've been talking with Professor Peter Bomer, who is at the Evergreen State College and who's written a very good article. It's in the recent Counterpunch. All about this. Counterpunch is a great source for all kinds of things. So I'd like to thank you very much for being with us.
And thank you for the questions. And if you want to, hopefully we'll talk again. And solidarity to all the people in Portland working for a better society.
Great. We'll keep up. Greece is not going to go away, you know, and we have to keep up with this story.
Great. So, I'll be there for a month, mid-August to mid-September, so maybe after that.
Oh, you will? Here in Portland?
I'm going to Greece August 16th.
Oh, I see. Oh, okay. Well, thank you very much for being with us.
Okay, bye-bye.
And stay tuned for Air Cascadia.
Yes, good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Air Cascadia coming right up. In 15 minutes, we'll have flashpoints, reaction to the Iran nuclear deal from journalist Robert Perry, a look at Israel's renegade nuclear program and why it's not talked about in the U.S. press, and we'll be taking a personal look at the implications of the Iran deal for Iranians in the U.S. and Iran. At 11 on Between the Covers, host David Naiman speaks with local writer Lydia Yuknovich about her new novel, The Small Backs of Children. But coming up next, it's Air Cascadia with Chris Andre, hosting with headlines, interviews, and commentary. Thanks for listening to KBOO Radio, and thanks KBOO members for your generous support. Not a current member? You can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today.
I'm a loving the old lion, a winner without fail.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the PDX Leo Party, Friday, July 31st, starting at 8 p.m. at Kelly's Olympian. A birthday celebration for all you Portland Leos with special performances from Sleep of Old Dominion and the Chicharrones, Mike Crenshaw, Smoke M2D6, and many more. Again, that's the PDX Leo Party on Friday, July 31st, starting at 8 p.m. at Kelly's Olympian, located at 426 Southwest Washington Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
In Cascadia. Today is Thursday, July 16th, 2015, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM,